Hello, friends, and welcome back to Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live today from the studios here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle on 1150 AM. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a better place. We just tried to reach Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on the phone and can't seem to reach him, but we're going to keep trying. Dr. Judy Mikovits is also on the line, and I'm going to be bringing her on now. She's a fantastic scientist. She's finished writing a book called The Plague of Corruption with Robert F. Kennedy writing the foreword. The book is already a bestseller, having sold out on Amazon, I think, on 12 hours the first day it was released. From Dr. Judy's doctoral thesis, which changed the treatment of HIV/AIDS, she saved millions of lives, including the basketball great Magic Johnson, to her spectacular discovery of a new family of human retroviruses, and her latest research, which points to a new golden age of health. She's always been on the leading edge of science, and her book, you can find out much more information about her book at http://plaguethebook.com/. And we'll keep trying to reach Mr. Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, here on the line, and my producer will let me know when he comes on. But anyway, we'll start with you, Judy. Judy, thank you so much for coming on today.
I'm delighted, Ted. Nice to talk to you again.
Oh, so good to talk to you, too. Judy was on my show a few weeks ago, and I always felt that, we barely scratched the surface on lots of different topics. And tell us, for listeners just tuning in now who aren't familiar with your work, if you could tell us a little bit about your work, Judy, and how you got started as a scientist.
Well, I have a PhD in biochemistry and molecular biology, which I got about a decade after my bachelor's degree in biochemistry from University of Virginia. My PhD was from George Washington University, and I spent essentially my entire career developing therapies for cancer and infectious disease, primarily HIV/AIDS, and essentially just understanding how viruses interact with the immune system to cause disease. So we work to understand how they cause disease, and then we work to solve the problem.
Wonderful, wonderful, and you had some very some difficult times about 9-10 years ago. What happened during that time? Oh, we have we've got Mr. Kennedy on.
I didn't want to tell that story again.
All right, great. Well, let's bring on Robert Kennedy. Mr. Kennedy, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, good. Good to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on my show today. Judy's on the line, too.
Hey, Judy.
Hi, Bobby. Nice to talk to you.
Congratulations on your book.
Thank you. We're working hard. It's interesting times.
Well, you deserve it. It's really fantastic.
Thank you.
I wanted to tell you, Bobby, it's so good to talk to you, and I'm so glad you could come on today. I had a psychic on my show during the last hour. Her name's Judy Kelly from Los Angeles, and your uncle, President John F. Kennedy, came in and wanted to give you his love and best wishes. He's very proud of you for your work.
I don't think I heard what you said, but.
Okay. I wanted to tell you that I had a psychic on my last hour named Judy Kelly from Los Angeles, and she's I consider her one of America's best psychics. And she said that your uncle John F. Kennedy came through, and he said that he's very proud of you, immensely proud of you for your wonderful work.
Okay.
So you. I was told to give you that message. So. Anyway, you're a resolute defender of the environment, and you serve as senior attorney for the Natural Resources Defense Council, as well as the chief prosecuting attorney for the Hudson River and president of the Waterkeeper Alliance. You've worked on environmental issues across the Americas,
and published many different books, including the on the New York Times bestseller Crimes Against Nature, The River Keepers, and children's books as well. What do you think, I love your opinion on what's happening today in today's world, Mr. Kennedy. I know there's so much going on right now, but you've been able to play a key part in that in making a positive contribution to society and raising people's consciousness.
Hello?
Okay, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I didn't get what your question was.
Oh, okay. Okay. What do you make what's going on now in the country, in the world, with this virus thing?
Well, I mean, my concern is, I have a couple of concerns. One is, my concern is that there's not really any kind of risk assessment that is occurring. So, you know, I think there is strong evidence that the quarantine may actually kill more people than the virus, and I don't think those kind of assessments are being done. And I think people say, you know, kind of the predominant view is that we should listen to the scientists and that we need to do what they tell us. And I agree that science should be the basis for public policy, but you can't just listen to, in this case, virologists. You know, Anthony Fauci, who's a man with many faults, but he may be able to predict with some accuracy the death rates and the injury rates from various lockdown scenarios from coronavirus. But he has no competence to predict how many people are going to die from the quarantine. And there are many scientists out there who are competent in that. There's a whole discipline in economics and the social sciences that compare the relationship between unemployment and death and injury and well-being rates. And there's, in particular, there's a school of science that was heavily, heavily developed in authoritative science from the 1980s when there was downsizing occurring in many large American corporations that looked at the relationship between unemployment and death. And what they found was that the death rates increased in the United States. And this was at a time when the population was much smaller. It was 82. So that's 40 years ago almost. That the death rates were equivalent to about 37,000 deaths for every 1 point in unemployment. And the people are dying of stress-related illnesses, about 9,000 dying of heart attacks. There were 900 deaths from suicide. In addition to that, there was 3,300 additional admissions to mental institution for every point of unemployment, and about 4,000 imprisonments for every point of unemployment. So, at this point, the best economic projections are that we're going into a scenario of about 35 unemployment points, which is the equivalent to the Great Depression. And we started out at 3.2, which means we're adding over 30 points of unemployment. So by those very conservative projections, that means just of deaths, of about 1,100,000 deaths. And that the worst projections for coronavirus are around the 200,000 range. So we're talking about death rates from unemployment from the quarantine that are five times as great as coronavirus, even if we didn't do any lockdown, would cause us. And in addition to that, there are additional factors that are going to contribute to even worse situations. For example, you know, isolation kills people, and there are really, really good studies on that. Sergi has published 13 studies that show the number of deaths from isolation. And, you know, we should keep in mind that in Italy, 96% of the people who died during the coronavirus epidemic died not in hospitals, but in their homes. Mm-hmm. And for many of those people, they were dying of isolation. And in addition to that, there's going to be severe disruptions to supply chains for foods and for medicines that is not being accounted for, which could easily add up to many, many deaths. There are people, you know, up to 1 billion people may die globally from that. And in addition to that, there is deferred or delayed medical treatment. So today, there are hundreds of thousands of surgeries that have been postponed. And if you assume that surgeries save lives, you have to bet that a lot of people are dying from that. And also, people deferring care in hospital and doctor's checkups on non-emergency diseases like diabetes, like hypertension, like cancer. There are going to be many deaths from that. But when CNN tells us, you got to listen to the scientists, they're not saying, listen to the social scientists, the economists, the psychiatric scientists and social scientists. They're saying, just listen to one scientist, a virologist, Anthony Fauci. But Anthony Fauci has no competence to make this kind of risk assessment.
Sure.
And the politicians, in many cases, are just abdicating their job, which is to take all of these costs into account and not just, you know, impose a $4 trillion cost on our nation.
Mm-hmm.
And precipitate a Great Depression that, you know, listen, to pay off that debt, what are the states like California going to have to do? They're going to suspend daycare. They're going to suspend school programs. They're going to suspend, and they're going to, constrict their medical and treatments and their hospital treatments, and there's going to be a million ways that they figure out how to pay this huge debt that we're driving up.
Well,
and those restrictions are going to kill untold numbers of people.
Well,
and you know, my major worry now is that nobody is doing those risk assessments, nobody at all. Mm-hmm. And nobody, mm-hmm, even, there's not even a forum to raise these questions on, because if anybody tries to raise them, you know, CNN, Anderson Cooper, and Sanjay Gupta are just, you know, giving these obsequious interviews with Anthony Fauci and Bill Gates and saying, you know, as if they're the Pope and infallible. And whatever you say goes, you should be able to dictate these national policies that are going to impact Americans for generations. And I think that's a really bad bet for our country.
Well, Robert, you've made some excellent, excellent points that I hadn't even thought about before. I'm most familiar, of course, with Governor Jay Inslee, since I'm from Washington State and this show broadcasts out of Seattle. And at his news conference 2 weeks ago, Governor Inslee said he was basing his decisions on science, but it may be, and he may keep this shut down indefinitely. And then recently he said that he would require vaccinations and would require everyone to be microchipped before the shutdown is ended. I think for many people, they will find that decision intolerable.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I think most Americans would put up with. You know, a certain number of people will be able to be, you know, through by pumping up fear, they will be talked into submitting and obeying and putting up with this new regimen of surveillance and the loss of our civil rights. But, you know, I think enough people still remember that America is supposed to be land of the brave and the home of the free. And the reason that we're the home of the free is because we're the land of the brave. And that we can't be letting public officials pump up fear in pharmaceutical companies to corral us into compliance with, you know, with what essentially is just a surveillance state. That is going to benefit billionaires who own these 5G systems, which are just surveillance systems.
Right.
To harvest our data and to, you know, and then to further enslave us. That's my worry. I hope there's enough Americans that, you know, to resist.
I think, thank you so much for sharing your opinion on that, Robert. I know that Governor Newsom just came out with a press release, I think it was 2 or 3 days ago, that he would not be ending the shutdown in California until everyone's vaccinated. I don't think most Americans will stand for it, myself.
Yeah, I
know
either.
We won't.
And by the way,
yeah.
We've had a flu vaccine since 1930. And according to the Cochrane Collaboration, it's so ineffective that you have to give 100 flu shots to avert one case of flu. And that's a case. It's symptoms. It's not hospitalizations. It's not deaths. There's zero evidence that the flu shot averts any deaths. And that is according to the Cochrane Collaboration, which is the ultimate arbiter of pharmaceutical product safety science. And they reviewed 247 studies in 2010, 2014, 2019, and that was their verdict. The flu shot, there's zero evidence that the flu shot averts any death. And they, you know, they may be able to develop a vaccine that that stops teenagers, and that's who they'll test it on, from getting COVID. The question they really need to ask is it going to avert COVID deaths in the fragile elderly and people with chronic disease and comorbidities? And the only way to figure that out is if you do a placebo test in those cohorts.
Right.
And as far as I know, there's none of those tests being planned or being done. And, you know, this idea that they're going to get a magic vaccine that suddenly abolishes coronavirus is highly unlikely. They haven't been able to do that for flu in almost 100 years, 90 years they've had the vaccine, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I had heard as well and read on the internet some articles saying, Bobby, that people that had the flu shot actually lowered their resistance and immune systems to make them more vulnerable to the virus.
Yeah, well, there are many studies that show that. There's a Pentagon study that came out in 2020, January, that shows that people who get the flu shot are 36% more vulnerable to coronavirus.
Wow.
But there are many, many studies over the years that show that flu shots make you far more vulnerable, 5 times more vulnerable to non-flu infections, including coronavirus, Coxsackie disease, all these other upper respiratory illnesses.
Amazing. That's amazing. Judy, I'd love your opinion on this, too.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this because those are the exact points that we make over and over again. And when the Prevnar shot for pneumonia is added, even the CDC itself admits that it's far worse for the elderly who get both of those. Did they develop such things as AFib, the afibrillation, the cardiac diseases, and yet at the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices in February of 2019, when this was revealed, the pharmaceutical companies convinced the doctors to go ahead and give the 2 shots anyway because they'd already educated the doctors to give both. And so they pharmaceutical companies think that doctors are so intelligent that they can't retrain them, so they continue to give toxic combinations of these vaccines to the elderly. And really, we do just far more damage with these vaccine programs than any of these pandemics. We all remember swine flu, H1N1, bird flu, Zika, Ebola, the pandemic du jour that rolls out more and more restrictions on our freedoms. And I just want to say, Governor Newsom has no authority to declare that the lockdowns will continue until Americans comply, because I know I spend this 24/7 doing this, because we will not bow down. We will not give up our constitutional freedoms. We will not give up our religious freedoms to determine what happens and to prevent aborted fetal tissues, animal tissues, you name it, from being injected in our parents, in our children, and in ourselves. We won't give up those freedoms, and we haven't yet, and we never will. So we'll recall Governor Newsom before that happens. And so we're planning many demonstrations and have had many peaceable assembly demonstrations, as is our constitutional right to assemble peaceably anywhere. And we'll continue to do so until they get the message.
I think looking at it from a broad perspective, I think all of us can agree that we all want good health for our children. The second thing is that we're not against vaccinations per se, but we all want vaccine safety. And that brings up another point too, Robert and Judy. Have there been any studies at all done on vaccinations for safety studies?
There have not been. There's never been for any of the 72 vaccines that are now currently mandated for American children. There has never been a preclinical safety study. In other words, a study that compares a vaccinated group to an unvaccinated group, which is, or a placebo group, which is what you would need to do prior to the approval of any other medication. But vaccines are take advantage of a loophole, and that loophole is an artifact of CDC's legacy as the Public Health Service. That was its predecessor agency, which was a quasi-military agency, which is why people at CDC have military ranks, like the Surgeon General. And the vaccine program was initially conceived as a national security defense against a biological attack on our country. So they wanted to make sure that if the Russians attacked us with anthrax or some other biological agent, that we could quickly fabricate and then deploy 200 million people a vaccine without regulatory impediments. And so they said, well, if we call it a medicine, we're going to have to safety test it. But if we call it a biologic, we can exempt them from safety testing. And that's what they did. And so none of the vaccines have ever been tested. And what that means is nobody knows what the risk profile is for any of the vaccines we're now mandating to healthy children. The medicine that we're forcing healthy people to take. And nobody knows, nobody can say with any scientific basis whether any of those 72 shots or doses is averting more problems than it's causing. And there is plenty of really strong evidence that for most of those vaccines, the chances of getting injured by the vaccine is much larger and the chance of getting injured by the disease. And I would offer to anybody to go through each vaccine one at a time and go through that data. And the data, by the way, is coming to us from government databases and from the vaccine inserts. So there's enough evidence there that those vaccines are, most of them, are actually hurting and killing more people than they're saving.
Interesting. Interesting.
Incidentally, most of the vaccines that were added after 89 were not, you know, people think when they think of a vaccine, they think of smallpox and, you know, and measles. But most of the vaccines that they added were not casually contagious diseases. They're diseases like rotavirus and hepatitis B that, you know, hepatitis B you get from unprotected sex, usually man on man, or you get it from sharing needles. Why would you give that vaccine to a one-day-old child? And here's why they're giving it to them, because they developed it for prostitutes and for male homosexuals back in the 80s. And, you know, CDC recommended it for those groups, and Merck began manufacturing the vaccine, and it turned out they couldn't sell any. None of those groups wanted to buy the vaccine. So Merck went back to CDC and said, look, we've spent a lot of money on this, and we're losing a ton of money, and you need to figure out a way for us to make money. So CDC said, well, we'll make kids take it, even though they're at zero risk. They mandated, and by the way, it's not like you take one vaccine and then 30 years later you have, you know, men on sex, or you're shooting dope and sharing needles and you're protected. The vaccine wears off within 2 years, so then you have to get it again. And then again, and again, you have to take five of them before you're 10 years old. And, you know, and we know that that vaccine kills a lot of babies.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It just, and those babies are at zero risk from that disease. Zero.
Wow. This, Bobby, this brings him up to my next point, Bobby and Judy. In the movie, The Truth About Vaccines, it's very interesting what they said about the year 1989. For chronic children's diseases. Before 89, there were a lot fewer. And after 89, it jumped from like 12% of children had chronic diseases to almost 54%. Could you explain why the difference? It'd be very interesting to hear your answer.
Well, I mean, you know, nobody can tell you definitively, but the vaccine schedule, the Vaccine Act, which gave pharmaceutical company is immunity from liability for injuries caused by vaccines. So no matter how toxic the ingredient, no matter how negative the company, no matter how grievous the injury, you can't sue them. And that was passed in 86. And by the way, the reason it was passed is because there was a diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis vaccine at that time that was killing a lot of kids and causing really severe encephalopathy and brain injuries. And Wyeth and the other vaccine companies went to Congress and said, we are losing $20 on these vaccines and injuries for every dollar that we're making. And we're going to stop making that. And by the way, we cannot make these vaccines safe. It's impossible. A certain number of people are just going to die from the vaccine. And we're not going to make them anymore unless you give us full immunity from liability. Hmm. Oh, Congress gave them immunity from liability for a vaccine that they said cannot be made safely, and that's been given to healthy kids, and it's going to kill a number of them.
Wow.
And so, and that from then on, they have no incentive to make them safer. Because, of course, you know, if you make them more dangerous, you make people sick, and then you can sell them other products. And these companies, it was a gold rush because they realized, hey, now we've got a product. You don't have to safety test it. You don't have to. There's no liability. And those are the two biggest costs for every other medicine. And plus, there's no marketing advertising costs because the government is going to mandate that 78 million kids buy them every year.
Right. Wow.
There was a gold rush, and the vaccine. I had three vaccines when I was a kid. Today's kids get 72.
Wow. Wow.
And that year, 89, was a key year when they started really adding a lot of mercury and aluminum vaccines. And when Congress said to EPA, tell us what year the autism epidemic started. They drew a red line and said 89. Autism went from 1 in 10,000 in my generation, 1 in every 34 kids today, 1 every 22 boys. Allergic diseases like asthma, peanut allergies, eczema, anaphylaxis became epidemic, and we know they're caused by the vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
The peanut allergies went from 1 in around 1,200 to 1 in 12 kids. The autoimmune disease like juvenile diabetes, arthritis exploded. Mm-hmm. And the neurodevelopmental diseases, ADD, ADHD, speech delay, tics, Tourette syndrome, narcolepsy, SIDS, ASD, autism exploded, all of them, beginning in 89. And if you look at there's about 420 diseases that became epidemic after 89, chronic diseases. And if you want to know where to find the list of those diseases, those are listed on the list of all the diseases that became epidemic in 1989. And they're also on one other place, the manufacturer's insert. So all 420 of those diseases are listed on the inserts for vaccines that the manufacturers put with every vial. And the reason they're honest there is the only way you can sue those companies under VICA, the Vaccine Act, is if they know of an injury that's caused by their product and they fail to list it in the insert. So they're honest on those inserts. One place they're honest. And in fact, some of the inserts for DTP vaccines or DTaP vaccines say autism on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll deny it every place else. But the one place they have to tell the truth, they admit it. And what, you know, the Paul Offit and the industry spokesman will say is, well, they just throw everything but the kitchen sink into those vaccine inserts, but that's not true. They legally, under the federal code of federal regulations, the FDA cannot allow them to list any injury that FDA does not believe is caused by the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, in addition to that, there's a tremendous amount of science out there, thousands and thousands of studies that link those injuries specifically to those vaccines. But it's not just the correlation. There's mechanistic studies and toxicological and pharmacological and clinical and bench studies and animal studies that all say the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fascinating. One thing I wanted to ask you in the truth about vaccines, Robert, it stated that both you and Dale Bigtree sued HHS because they hadn't done any monitoring of the vaccines or safety studies in more than 30 years since the Vaccine Act was passed in 1986.
Yeah, that's right. One of the things is when Congress passed the Act, they realized they were removing all responsibility or incentive for vaccine companies to do vaccine safety. And think about this. If those companies, when you get measles, it's a 1 week, it's a rash. In 1963, prior to the Vaccine Act prior to the measles vaccine, the death rate for measles, everybody's talking about the death rate for coronavirus now. Is it 1 out of 100, 2 out of 100? The death rate for measles was 1 in 500,000 Americans.
Well,
so, we did not need any vaccine, and it was declining. It was going down every year. There was only 400 people dying a year. They were almost all people, kids in the south of the Mississippi Delta who were starving to death.
Mm-hmm.
And vitamin D deficiencies, and that's what was killing them. Measles will kill you if you have a vitamin D deficiency. And that was before we had the poverty programs in this country. So those kids, there were people literally starving with rickets and red hair, malnutrition, et cetera. But it was declining. So the Vaccine Act said you know, recognize that now the vaccine companies had no incentive to see whether vaccines were safe. And if you get measles, what happens? It's a one-week rash, and the cure for it is chicken soup and vitamin D, neither of which can be patented. So the vaccine companies, the pharma companies, were making nothing on it. But if you can give somebody a vaccine that causes them seizures or epilepsy for life, or autism or diabetes or rheumatoid arthritis or ADD, you now have a lifetime customer who's going to buy the EpiPens from you and the albuterol inhalers, the Concerta and the Ritalin, and Adderall and any seizure medication and the diabetes insulin and all those other things. And that's, you know, now they have 54% of our kids who are dependent on them for life. And they're making $60 billion in selling vaccines, but they're making $500 billion selling the treatments for the permanent chronic injuries that are caused by vaccines. And the vaccine, the infectious diseases, were all self-limiting and all treatable. And the chronic diseases that the vaccines are causing are all uncurable, and they're permanent, and they're not self-limiting. So these vaccine companies are making a killing. You know, if you look at the products, the top 20 products for the vaccine industry, the blockbuster drugs, almost all of them go to treat an injury that is listed on their vaccine inserts as being caused by the vaccines. And they have no incentive to make them better. They have a big incentive to make them more dangerous, because that gives them more lifetime customers. And by the way, the four companies that make all these vaccines are all convicted felons. They, on their other drugs, they paid $35 billion in the last 10 years for defrauding regulators, falsifying science, you know, lying to doctors, killing hundreds of thousands of Americans. Just one drug, Vioxx, is the biggest vaccine producer, but its blockbuster drug in early 2000s was Vioxx, which they were selling as a headache pill, knowing that it caused heart attacks. They knew it. They didn't tell their customers. And they killed 120,000 to 500,000 Americans. And they knew it. And when we sued them, we got their spreadsheets from their bean counters saying, we're going to kill all these people, but we'll still make money. And they didn't. Wow. So why do you think that company would begin to act morally in the one sector where they could never get caught?
Well,
which is vaccines. So Congress said, we know we're giving them, you know, letting them off the leash. We need you to watch them. So they ordered Congress, they ordered HHS to every two years do a thorough study on vaccine safety and then report back to Congress on what improvements they've made. And when Dell and I sued them, we couldn't find those reports anywhere. Any evidence that that has ever done one. This is 36 years later. And finally, when we sued them, they acknowledged that, yeah, they have never done one, even though it's a legal requirement. I have another call right now, so I'm going to need to sign off.
All right. All right, Robert. Well, listen, it's been such an honor and a privilege.
Judy, you can wrap this up with a big powerhouse speech, okay?
Okay.
And congratulations, Judy. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Robert, for coming on today. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks,
good.
Bobby.
Keep up your good work. Judy, good. I'm glad you're still there. I'm so excited.
So I was learning and listening, and I was taking it from my own point of view. And what was so key, because in 1989, you know, I'm not yet, I'm just 30 years old, 31 years old, and I was developing natural product drugs and immune therapies for cancer and AIDS at the National Cancer Institute. And the rigor and the amount of testing and the years that went into the development of a drug and learning you know, all of the things that we're talking about, all of those rare and not so rare side effects of the drugs and the drug interactions. And right. and it was brutal work. And sure. and yet at the same time, the diseases weren't self-limiting. The diseases weren't a few days, as Bobby said, with measles and chicken pox and some of the others that were self-limiting. You know, the diseases were, you know, at the time, HIV, AIDS, and cancer, they were death sentences. And then we spin forward to COVID-19, which is self-limiting and nothing. And yet, as Bobby was saying, with the economic predictions of what shutting down the world did over, you know, the push to force everyone to be vaccinated. And we know the studies with the vaccines, the people that are going to be hurt, the people that are going to die first from these mandated vaccines for the coronavirus, for COVID-19, the disease development, are all those people he just mentioned who were injured. Who's susceptible? Well, the kids with autism, 1 in 22 boys, the kids with autism, as he was mentioning, they have profound losses or low levels of glutathione, that key intracellular antioxidant that's necessary to fight, let's just say, a coronavirus, SARS coronavirus 2. They have DNA methylation, gene expression defects. They have autoimmune disease, ongoing type 1 diabetes driven by the vaccines. We've done several of these in Vaccine Corps where the kids don't even have autism and they've developed diabetes. So family members with other kinds of autoimmune diseases. These are the kids. So the victims of what you heard, of what we all heard Bobby say, the victims of 40 years of crime against humanity, and the very victims of the injuries of these laws and these convicted felon pharmaceutical companies, these will be the first to die. And that's what it's for me, I can't even comprehend the level of evil that would, and Tony Fauci knows this. Robert Redfield knows this. Deborah Birx right. knows this, the head of the FDA. That's why they're preventing us from keeping the therapies as we're stuck at home, as we, you know, housed inside the electrochemical damage, the damage from not getting natural sunlight, the depression, the seasonal affective disorder, which, you know, these are the same molecular pathways we develop many of our therapies, and we know this flame causes cancer and AIDS. So that the devastation being done by these decisions is just profound and beyond comprehension.
Well, I have to ask you, Judy. I'm it's too bad Bobby's not here, but that's fine. I have listeners all over the world, and I've gotten reports from Sweden, South Korea, Taiwan, and Mexico that they're all open, and also their virus rates are far lower than they are here in the United States.
Absolutely. This is natural herd immunity. So when healthy people don't spread disease, I'm just going to keep saying it, healthy people aren't coughing. Healthy people don't need to wear a mask. Healthy people actually get boosted in immunity when they ground, when they walk on the earth, and they sense their skin, which is their immune system, senses the molecular structures of all kinds of microorganisms that boost their immunity to their natural environment, to what's in the air. You know, this is how we educate an immune system. So of course, yes, the people that didn't enact these measures, they're dealing with this so-called pandemic, and from the next one and the next one and the next one. The way to develop a healthy immunity. We've heard a lot about that vaccines don't develop a healthy immunity, and that's clear from how sick our kids and our families are these days. But what we see is how healthy countries and are, and how the COVID-19, the SARS coronavirus 2, is nothing in countries where wellness and health and spiritual healing and energetic healing and everything we know to be immune boosting and immune modifying are used. Yes, they'll survive the next one and the next one and the next one because they won't have crippled their immune systems with these, not only vaccines, but other very dangerous biological and other drugs. And so the plant, the therapies that I made as a kid until the switchover in 1989 were from plants. They were natural products. I'm a natural products chemist. So then when it costs so much for the small companies and things like that to make biological therapies for cancer and natural product extractions, it's quite an involved testing necessary to do any of this. So those, when that went by the wayside, everybody's just like, hey, yeah, we'll just make vaccines because you don't have to test them. You don't have to use, as he said, no advertising, no nothing. And just, so we lost so much. And he mentioned early on in what he was talking about, most of what I do right now is as a consultant, and because my passion's always been cancer therapies, and we solved AIDS, so we don't have to worry about that one. That was, you know, the changes of understanding how the virus is caused or could cause. Now we know they don't. We know you can be infected with HIV and never get AIDS, and that's a big victory. We know we've never developed a vaccine for AIDS that did anything other than drive the disease. We know that will happen with SARS. We know that happened with MERS, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. So here we are, and Governor Newsom and your governor says, "Oh well, you're not getting out of the house until you obey." And again, I'm just going to keep saying we won't obey and we won't bow down, and you're not our God, and we're going to take back our country.
Well, Judy, I have to ask you on that point. I've been doing a lot days of research on this. I'm not a medical doctor. I want to tell everybody I'm not a medical doctor, and I'm not a scientific researcher, but I do like to try to find the truth. And I found one article that the masks that some businesses are requiring people to wear, the coronavirus itself is, according to this article, is 0.12 microns in diameter. The best mask you can get on the market is what's called an N95 mask, which has a capacity to keep out particles up to 0.3 microns. So the coronavirus will go right through that mask. A surgical mask can go between 2 to 10 microns. So again, the coronavirus is smaller than that, and it will go right through it. A strand of human hair, for example, is 15 microns in diameter. Both Delta and American Airlines recently announced that they're requiring everyone, all passengers, crew, pilots, everybody, to wear these surgical masks when they're flying. And I think the intent is good. I mean, people want to be, of course, you know, protected. But according to this article, I'd love your take on it. As you, as one of the top scientists in the United States, what do you make of these surgical masks, and are they doing any good for us at all?
They absolutely aren't doing good, as you mentioned, for those reasons, and more importantly, they're doing harm, because as you wear those masks, especially you will deprive yourself of oxygen, especially people like airline pilots. This is the first I've heard they were requiring the pilots to wear them. Well, if you're up at 30,000 feet, and you're breathing the air that is known to be toxic, and you're exposed to radiation, you're over the ozone layer, those pilots can pass out. They can literally pass out flying the plane. I was more concerned all this week about construction workers, as we're living in a new development and we see the construction workers in the 90-degree heat climbing on ladders. They can pass out. The elderly who are already compromised, say people with COPD or anything else, wear the mask and they're depleting their oxygen. They can get dizzy. They get confused. They can have car accidents. So that not only are they doing no good, which is very clear. And I usually say I worked with HIV for 22 years in a biosafety level 3 facility where I isolated viruses from people and animal blood and body tissues the entire time, and never once did I wear a mask. Why? Because it wasn't going to protect me. Most things aren't airborne in dry air. Nobody's coughing. And if I did put my hands on my face, I ran a far greater risk of transmitting, the blood and body fluids and the contagions in those. There's not only no value, but there's a tremendous danger. And this is clear. And in fact, I have one of my friends made us a collar. I wear it as a tag, almost like a name tag on my shirt, and my husband does too. And it says, I'm exempt from the governor's regulation mandating face mask usage in public. Wearing a face mask poses a health risk to me. So under the American Disabilities Act, anybody that forces somebody wearing this, and under HIPAA guidelines, anybody that requires you to disclose medical conditions can get fined up to $75,000 or $150,000 for the first or second violation. They cannot require you to say what's wrong with you. We know that. They cannot require you that, and it's against the law. So we wear these shirt collar tags that say, no, we won't keep us out of your establishment. You won't do this. You're required by law to obey this. And this is some of the ways that we're taking back our rights legally. And here in California, we've made many, many, many of these signs, and any person can wear one. And you can't ask what's going on.
What it could happen too, like on Delta or American Airlines, now that they're requiring masks, if there's an elderly person there who suffers short of breath, conceivably, if they pass out or die from on a flight because of the mask, the airline could be liable.
Absolutely. According to that sign, the American Disabilities Act, you simply can't ask. You simply can't force. This is America, and there are laws, and that's the good news of what the AIDS activists in my day, they kept their rights. And so I always encourage the people that I work with and discuss that we won a lot. And we as the AIDS activists who said, no, you can't discriminate against us. You can't ask us. You can't stigmatize us. And now right. We can take advantage of those laws as citizens and say, this is unlawful, and here's your fine. So there are peaceable and ways that we can take advantage of the laws that are there to protect us, and we simply have to educate our legislatures. Educate our constituents, our friends, our family, and
right,
say, no, this
right.
is dangerous, and we won't, this is
Judy?
The way we can do this without helping. Yes, sir.
Sure. We've got about 2 minutes left, and I wanted to ask you a quick question.
Sure.
I'd love to get, I'll have to have this on for a future show. I'd love to ask a psychologist or social scientist, the psychological effects of wearing these masks, is it to muzzle us from a psychological level, from speaking out?
It's a psychological level, yes. So, we were thinking about that a very exact thing. So I see that, the same exact thing, yes.
Muzzling us. We've got about a minute and a half left, and I don't want you to leave yet, but I want to thank you so much for this wonderful interview, and both you and Mr. Kennedy. I want to give you the rest of the time to wrap up your wonderful interview, Judy.
Well, I just want to say thank you very much to everybody listening as we wake up and we realize that this coronavirus, this COVID-19, is not the national emergency. We shouldn't be fearful of each other. We should love each other. But at the same time, the national emergency created by these draconian measures, as Bobby described so well, can hurt so many. So go out and love somebody. Get them away from the isolation. Take a walk. Gather. Have a party. And try to heal one another and love one another.
Well, that's good advice. I know things are going to get better. I'm not a medical doctor or a scientist, but I know what's right and wrong, I think. And we all need to love each other more and spread light and love around the world. Judy, thank you so much for coming on today. And I hope everyone has a beautiful and happy weekend. Thanks so much for listening to Out of This World Radio. Bye-bye, everyone. Bye. Have a beautiful day.
Kanata ni hikaru.